Hello, everybody, and welcome to Anything But Traditional. I'm your host, Tamar Ben-Svi, and I'm so happy that you are here today to listen in on this week's episode. This week, we have Shlomo Lippman, the singing chayal, and I'm so happy that he's here to share his story, to share who he is. He talks about his father being a member of the Knesset, his love of music, his love of baseball. He shares the lessons he's learned from both over his life, and it's just really inspiring to see who he is, where he came from, where he's going. You know, he talks about his time in the Army also a lot, and how his Instagram took off during the Army, but how it was an opportunity, and how he realized that that opportunity was given to him by Hashem. And it wasn't just, oh, I'm getting an opportunity because I'm so special. But he realized, wow, Hashem needs me now. Now is the time that I'm going to step up. And I think it also just reminded me, last week we celebrated Purim. And we talk about Esther, right? Esther Malkah. And in the Megillah, Mordechai says to Esther that if you're not going to save the Jewish people, someone else will. That now is your time to shine, Esther. Now is your time to do right. And then I was editing the episode, I was like, wow, Shlomo Lippman really tapped into that same energy that Mordechai brought, that he realized now is my time to shine. Now is the time that Hashem put me in the world. Now is when I had to act. And thankfully he acted. Thankfully he sang his heart out, and we are all very grateful for that. And this episode is also sponsored by Kayla Haber-Goldstein, the VOD, Lave, Aura, the Rabbis of Sifa. I wanted to share this quick message with you about the Sifa. Listen in to this message to get a taste of why the Rabbis of Sifa is so important, how you can be involved, how you can get your rabbis involved. Make sure to check out the show notes where I will have the link to register. And without further ado, here's a quick message on the Rabbis of Sifa. A few months ago, I had my good friend Kayla Haber-Goldstein from Questions and Answers on the podcast. Kayla is one of my very, very close friends, and I'm always in awe of the work that she does. She's really one of my biggest role models. One of the things that Kayla Haber-Goldstein is doing right now is helping tremendously with the Aguna crisis. In 2023, Kayla Haber-Goldstein decided enough is enough, and that something concrete had to happen, that she had to make a change. And there was dysfunction going on in the divorce system, and that there needed to be an end to the Aguna crisis through those divorce systems. She hosted the Aguna of Sifa in August. 300 women attended in person, and 15,000 were on the live. Kayla brought leading rabbis to come speak to these women. Her goal was to raise awareness. Thank God it worked, and the very next day, a committee was created of rabbis from all over the world coming together to ensure that no one is trapped in the dead end marriage. As of today, 5 individuals have been freed. This is a team that Kayla has put together of rabbis and lawyers that understand that the rabbis are nervous. There's political reasons, halachic reasons. They need to know how to act. So with the help of Aura and Lev, Kayla's putting together another event. This one is called the Rabbi of Sifa. And Rabbi Lau, Rabbi Ullman, Rabbi Haber, and Rabbi Reese will be speaking. This Rabbi of Sifa is on April 7th. It is online and it is open to all Orthodox community rabbis. The goal is to create safe communities where marriage is not forced on anybody. So help us get your rabbi involved. Make sure your rabbi signed up. This year, when we sit at our Seder tables and we say that we are B'nai Huri, that we are free people, let that be true. Let that be true for all of Am Yisrael. No one should be trapped. We are a free nation. May we all feel free. May we all be free this Pesach. Thank you for helping us.
Now, enjoy the show. Thank you, Shlomo Lippman, for coming on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Anything But Traditional.
I'm here today with Shlomo Lippman.
How's it going?
The singing Chayal. I'm super excited to have you here today. My husband also remembers you from Silver Spring.
Yes.
And that you would sing there when you were like a little boy. I think my husband still can't believe that you're not a little boy anymore, you know, because that's how he remembers you. So, you know, you were just in Sadir not that long ago. Like, you were in your regular army service 5 years ago, 4 years ago?
Around, yeah.
Okay, so let's start there. Can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing in your regular army service and now what you were doing in Milouim? Milouim is your reserves, for anyone that doesn't know.
Right, so I was in Golani. I was in 51 in Battalion 51. I enlisted in March 2017 as part of a Hezer unit, and I did my regular basic training, advanced training. Once I finished my entire training, my entire masnul, I went straight to commander's course, finished commander's course, went back as a training commander, and that's how I finished my actual service. So I was never deployed anywhere in my actual service. I was always training either as a soldier or as a commander.
Cool.
Then I went back to yeshiva, and the first time that I was actually deployed was in Milu'im. That year, when I went back to yeshiva, they brought us back for a few weeks of Milu'im right away. That was the first time I had Milu'im. I was very, very young for a Milu'imnik. Everyone was asking us, aren't you still supposed to be in the army? You guys are only 22. What's going on? And we're like, no, we're really this, that. But it was fun to be in Milu'im and understand the different vibe of what you're doing. And the fact that out of the army does not mean that my army service is over. You know, it continues. And it was nice to have that right away, because sometimes it takes a few years until people do it. And then it's, you know, to have to get back into it is very hard. So I started Milu'im right away. And then now, on October 7th, we got called up and we were sent right to the Lebanon border. And so it's basically, it really feels the same. I mean, our job isn't that much different other than the fact that my gdud itself, my battalion, are the first ones to go in. We are in the front lines, but we're not going to be the first ones to go in because just the way the army works, you have different units that go in before other units and different jobs. But let's say if something breaks out in Lebanon, we're going to be there together with everybody else as infantry.
Great. No, for sure. Absolutely. It's interesting because my brother-in-law actually was called up on October 8th, and he also went to the border of Lebanon. Like, his last thing was in, like, Rosh HaNikra, and he would, like, sleep in the cable cars or something, which was kind of crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, supposedly something like that. That's, it was really crazy. Cool. Like, right by the water. I don't even know. He also had beautiful pictures from up there. I mean, it's beautiful up there.
I can imagine.
But basically, he got married when he had just finished his regular army service, and then he actually didn't go to Milu'im at all until October 8th. Like, I think in September, they had finally given him a new Milu'im nickname status and, like, given him a place that he was going to go. But, like, for him to be called up on October 8th was crazy because he hadn't been in the army since, you know, they've been married so far 8 years, and, like, he literally had not been called up for 8 years. So, like, it's a very big change for him, and I guess, like, for other people that haven't been, you're right, so, like, for you, like, I feel like Milu'im have been more of, like, a thing, more or less, since you finished the army, but for him, it was, like,
correct,
crazy, like, you know, what am I even doing here, you know?
Right.
So how often before this did you go to Milu'im?
So technically, it's around once a year. We had COVID, so that was 2 years of no Milu'im. Mm. And then last summer, while we were supposed to be deployed up north, I was in the States. So it took a while. Actually, it was around 3 or 4 years that I had not been to Milu'im. But up until then, it's around once a year.
You go for a month or a week or?
So there's training, and then there's actual KAV, being by the border, being on deployment. Training is 3 or 4 days, and deployment is around a month.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot of time away from your wife and kids, and for, like, a regular, you know, yearly basis, that's really hard.
Right, but it's something that you have to remember that everybody does.
Great.
You know, you're not special, and yeah, obviously I want to be home with my wife, my kids. I don't want to leave my regular life, but no one else does either, and, great, you know, I have to, it's the pasuk of Ha'achim Tetzurim Chamavetim Teshvupo. You know, I have to go out. There's no way that I'm going to stay home and get out of this when others are actually going up.
Can you translate that pasuk?
Are your brothers going to go out to war and you're just going to sit here? Right.
For sure.
There's no way that I know that people are going out there and I'm just going to sit at home and say, yeah, but I'm special. I'm not special. I'm just like everyone else.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, were you married the last time that you went to Milliwim? Like, besides for this?
Yeah, I was. I was married. It was before my son was born. It was around 3 years ago. And that was actually the first time that I was ever away from home after getting married.
Wow. And it was for like a full month.
So that was that was for training. So it was just a few days. But even that, you see how, you know, it disrupts life and you could look at it as something negative and like, oh man, or you could look at it as like what a privilege it is to be part of something so special.
Great. No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's incredible that you, you know, feel such a responsibility. And it's also incredible that you like are just like, let's do it. You know, like you're just like head on, your head strong. You're like, we got this. But I want to talk about your family, how you grew up. I guess the first question is, do you have any siblings?
I do. I'm the oldest of four kids. I'm the only boy. And then I have three younger sisters.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. Yeah. Okay. Wait. And what are your sisters' names? Can I ask?
Of course. So I'm Shlomo, obviously. And then there's Devorah, Chaya, and Zahava.
Very nice. Okay. And your family made Aliyah when you were how old?
I was 7 years old. My youngest sister, Zahava, was 7 weeks old.
Oh, so
no one was born here. Yeah, right. No one was born here.
Wow. So everyone came here and you guys came to Beit Shemesh?
Straight to Beit Shemesh.
Okay. So this was 19 years ago.
This was, yeah, almost 20 years ago, 2004.
Was Aliyah something that was always spoken? I mean, I don't know, like, when you're 7 years old, it's hard to be like, oh, like, I totally remember. But, like, do you know at all if your parents spoke about Aliyah a lot? Like, did they envision making Aliyah their whole lives?
So they told us that right after they got married, they thought of making Aliyah, ended up not doing it. And it was something that they always thought of kind of like in the back of their mind, you know, throughout different stages they went through in life, but it was never really something that they were pushing for. So I didn't really grow up with that. I grew up with Israel. I remember the first time I ever saw a satellite map of Israel, and that was like my first glimpse of what it really looks like. It looked very weird to me because I didn't know what an aerial view was. I was like 3 years old, and I was like, that's Israel? That looks very, very weird. But I remember looking at that map. It was always talked about at home, but Aliyah was never something that was really talked about. And then the first thought of moving to Israel for me was when one of my best friends decided that they were making Aliyah. A friend of mine, since I was 3 years old, Eki Cohen, they were making Aliyah. And I remember crying to my parents as a seven-year-old, we have to make Aliyah. We have to move to Israel. I want to be with Eki. And I remember them saying, we can go visit. We can go, you know, we can go see them. You know, I didn't know it, but at the time, but they were already thinking about it. And, you know, they're already planning probably going. And we ended up making Aliyah the same year. Exactly the same year, that same summer, a few very close families from Silver Spring, we all made Aliyah together in the summer of 2004.
Wow. And your dad, before that, he was teaching at Berman?
He was teaching at Berman, yeah.
Okay. And your mom, what was she doing?
My mom was a dance teacher. She was basically a stay-at-home mom at that time, but she was a ganena. She taught preschool. She did a lot of things within the community, but she had four kids under seven at home, and she had just given birth to my youngest sister, so she was at home at the time.
Wow. Okay. So was your dad very involved in the Silver Spring community?
He was very involved in every job that he had as an educator. He was an educator for many years before we had Aliyah, and continued on so here in Israel as a Rebbe in seminaries and in yeshivas. But he wasn't like, you know, it's different. The Jewish community in Silver Spring, You see, it's not like a secluded area. You're around non-Jews, you're around people that are different from you. So I knew that we had our shul, but I didn't know that there's like a community. I was 7 years old, you know, yeah, you got to remember. But he was very involved when he taught at the Yeshiva of Greater Washington. So he started a flag football league there, and he was always involved in the sports. And we had guys over at our house all the time. And in Berman as well, he was very, very involved, not just as I'm a teacher and that's it, but he was involved in the school and involved in their, you know, we used to go to their basketball games. So that was his role at the time. There wasn't really anything aside from that in the shul. He spoke every once in a while, but that was basically, he wasn't like part of a council or anything that I know of.
Got it. Wait, and then when you came, why did your family make Aliyah to Beit Shemesh? Do you know why they chose Beit Shemesh?
I think that they were just looking for a place that would be easy to make Aliyah to. You know, Beit Shemesh is a wonderful klita, a wonderful receiving community for Anglos. A lot of English speakers, a lot of people that have made Aliyah. And so it's easy to come here. Not easy, but it's easier to come here and have people that have gone through the same thing that you went through and to be able to just communicate with them. He was also looking for a job as an educator and found a job in a yeshiva called Yesodei HaTorah, which is not around anymore, but that was in Moshav Zanoach, which is a 7-minute walk from our house in Beit Shemesh. So that's the reason, that's the biggest reason why we made Aliyah to Beit Shemesh.
Wait, you go there a 7-minute walk to Zanoach?
Yeah, I grew up in Machpelah Yagoz.
Wow. And you have a house in Machpelah Yagoz?
Right. We live in the Ramah now, but Shavah myself, my wife and myself. But I grew up in Beit Shemesh, yeah, in Scheinfeld.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because right. I feel like a lot of people that grew up in Israel may not want to like stay in the Ramah. It's very American. What made you guys decide to stay in the Ramah, and do you like the Ramah?
It's funny. If you ask myself or any of my friends, any of my wife's friends growing up, they'd all say, I don't want to live in Beit Shemesh when I grow up. We're getting out of here, right?
Yeah.
And then life happens. You know, a lot of our friends ended up marrying friends from within Beit Shemesh. My wife, Batsheva, grew up here in the Ramah. I grew up in Beit Shemesh. So our family's here, right? It's not like I'm marrying a girl from somewhere else in Israel. And then it's like, okay, let's move closer to her parents. Yeah. We live a 10-minute walk from my in-laws right now and a 5-minute drive from where my parents live. So it ended up being kind of like we're close to family. And, you know, when we first got married, we didn't have a car. And it's like, okay, we have access to 2 cars and we're far enough away from our parents that we have our own place, but we're close enough that we're able to, you know, as newlyweds, we're able to go and see them. And so that's how we initially came to Beit Shemesh. And then I joined the Leif HaTorah Kollel here in Ramah Beit Shemesh. So obviously it was going to be, okay, we're going to stay in Beit Shemesh. So we got an apartment here in the Ramah. And then I started teaching this past year at Ahavat Yisrael, a high school here in Ramah Beit Shemesh. Cool. So basically, life happens and you realize, oh, okay, this is actually a pretty nice place. Yeah. Yes, I know that you thought of all the negatives of staying at home while you were growing up, but it ends up being a wonderful place to have a young family, at least. I don't know if we're going to end up settling here, but for now, it's definitely a great place for us.
For sure. No, it's really funny because Gideon and I talk about this a lot, that there was one time that Eliyahu Wittenberg, who I'm sure you know, came over. I don't know if he's still a plumber, but like he was a plumber at the time. And he was fixing our sink and we had a conversation with him. And he basically said something that like Gideon and I will never forget. And he said, Beit Shemesh is not a place that anybody believes that they're going to end up. Anybody that has any Dati Lumi, like Hishkafas, like, we're never going to end up in Beit Shemesh. And people say it right and left and right and left. And everyone thinks that they're not going to end up in Beit Shemesh. And then they all end up in Beit Shemesh. And like, whether we like it or not, we're all here. And it's like, there are great things about Beit Shemesh. You know, there are. But like, I think a lot of us definitely ended up, you know, the people or the family or the whatever. Like, there's reasons that we ended up here that even though we thought like, I'm never going to end up in Beit Shemesh.
Right.
okay. So did you go to Ahavat Yisrael growing up?
I went to Ahavat Yisrael for second grade, then Magen Avot from third grade till seventh grade, back to Ahavat Yisrael for eighth grade, and then Mitzvah Lichol for high school.
Whoa, 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 whoa. We're talking about this.
Yup.
Wait. How did you go from... Okay, first of all, how were you even allowed to go from Ahavat Yisrael to Magen Avot? And second of all, how was that transition? That's a massive transition. For anybody listening, like, Ahavat Yisrael is very Dati Lumi, and Magen Avot is, like, Haredi, and, like, it's a big difference. And often we hear, like, Magen Avot, if you go to Ahavat Yisrael, you can't switch into Magen Avot. What happened?
So the politics involved, I don't know, so I don't really care about that. But Magen Avot is Haredi American. It's important to say that. It's not Haredi Israeli. It's Haredi American place, which is already very, very different.
But it's still in Ramah Beit Shemesh bed.
It's at the very, very edge of Aleph. So it's not like within all the craziness. So the school that I went to in the States, I didn't go to Burma Hebrew Academy. I went to a school called the Torah School, which is, it's not a Haredi school by any means, but it is closer, the feel, I want to say hashkafa, because again, I can't, the word hashkafa in this entire conversation about these schools is very, because you can talk about the types of kids that go there or what's the hashkafa of the actual school. It's not, well, let's put hashkafa aside for a second.
Yeah.
I'll get back to it in a second, definitely. But just the overall feel of the rabbeim, of the learning, was very much like what I had in first grade in the States. Came to Israel in second grade. At the time, Ahavat Yisrael was a very new school, very different place than it is now. Now I teach there. I see what's going on. And it just wasn't the right fit for me at all. And we were definitely looking for something, a different vibe, a place where I felt like I had more of a Rebbe, somewhere I could just sit and learn. I loved learning Torah. And that was really important to me, important to my parents. So in third grade, I moved to Magen Avot, and it was a perfect fit for me at the time. Absolutely perfect fit. Yeah, it was in third grade. I was like 9 years old, just sitting, learning Torah. You're not thinking about politics. You're not thinking about Hashkafa at that age. Obviously, you have questions about certain things that happen in Israel or in school, but you just talk to your parents about that, just like a regular young kid. You're not really getting to these philosophical questions that you get to at older ages.
For sure.
Then comes seventh grade. I started seeing differences between myself and my classmates and the school as a whole. Just as an example, the school on Yom HaTzma'ut, there's a volleyball tournament and you go home early, but the school during davening continues saying Tachanun. And I was saying Hallel. And I felt like this isn't the right place for me right now. You know, I'm getting to an age where things are different. I'm starting to look at the world in a different way. And I knew, and ended up being my parents let me make the decision of where I wanted to go for eighth grade. And I made the decision that I wanted to go back to Rappaport, back to Avat Yisrael. Because Hashkafah Magen Avot wasn't good for me anymore. It ended up being a great choice for me learning-wise as well, because in Magen Avot, eighth grade is the last grade, and you run the school. So you don't really get a lot of learning done because it's like a 12th grader in high school. You just kind of like do whatever you want. Whereas in Havat Yisrael, in Rappaport, you had the high school above you. So you never felt like, oh, that's it. This is like the last year. So I ended up having a lot more learning done in Havat Yisrael than I would have as an eighth grader in Magen Avot. And that really prepared me for going to Mitzvah Chofer High School, which is a very intense Gemara learning program where you learn a daf to a daf and a half of Gemara a day. Wow. Had I not had that last year of really getting into things, it would have been a lot harder for me.
Wow, that's crazy. Wait, so you seem like you're a very good student, very studious, like you really enjoyed learning and the academic pursuit, all of that.
I try to be. When it comes to Limudei Kodesh, when it comes to learning Torah, Gemara, I was not that way when it came to math, when it came to science. If we fast forward to 12th grade, I was playing baseball for the Israel national team at the time. And my 12th grade day basically looked as follows. Wake up, daven. I was in Gemara Shir, learned until like around 1:30. And then the rest of the day, until we had Bagriot, until we actually had tests, the rest of the day was me working out, training in baseball, or going to baseball practice, and then coming back the next morning to school. Like for me, 12th grade was, you would think it would be Gemara and then music. No, music I always knew that I wanted to be involved in music, but at the time it was all baseball oriented. I was very focused on baseball. So it was Gemara and baseball.
Wow. Okay, wait. So let's talk more about baseball, right? Because I did not even know that you are a baseball player. Do you still consider yourself a baseball player?
I definitely do. I made a switch. I made a small switch in my brain around a year and a half ago, basically when I officially started my career in music, that baseball is going to have to take a backseat or a secondary seat to music if I want to be successful. I started playing baseball when I was 4 years old in the States, continued playing in the States when I got to Israel, continued playing here in Israel. There was a little league baseball league here in Beit Shemesh called Darius's League. Any kid my age at the time definitely played there. It was by the AMPI.
Does it still exist?
Okay, this is what happened. It joined with the IAB, the Israel Association of Baseball, which is the statewide little league, and then, you know, high school teams, and then there's an adult league as well. And the national team is built off the best players from within this league.
Got it.
So I started playing there when I was 12. I made my first national team, the under 12 national team. We went and played in a tournament in Italy, ended up winning gold there. And that was supposed to be it. At the time, my parents were like, this is your one time. You get to play on the national team. Enjoy it. And then the next summer, my family was all at Camp Misora for the summer. And the under 15 national team was supposed to play in a tournament in Oneonta, New York, which is around half an hour away from where Camp Misora is.
Cool.
So they were like, you know what? Sure, you can play this year. And then it kind of was like every year. And then I wasn't going to play during my Maccabiya year when I was in 10th grade. But then the coach called my father and said, look, we would love for Shlomo to play on this team. So I went back. So every year it was just like, okay, I guess this is continuing. Okay, I guess this is continuing until it got to the point where in 12th grade, I was chosen to be one of 12 players that were chosen as the inaugural class of the Israel Baseball Academy. And I basically started taking baseball incredibly seriously. Up until that year, my two favorite sports were baseball and basketball. And then baseball just became the love of my life.
Wow. Okay. Wait.
And, so then, and all my free time, everything was I was thinking about baseball all the time. I wanted to pursue it. I wanted to go play college baseball, maybe pro baseball. That was my mindset. Even though I knew that I was going to go to yeshiva, I was going to go to the army. So what happens with my baseball dream? Also, I'm a firm kid, and I know that I'm not going to play on Shabbos no matter what. Doesn't matter what opportunity I get. Playing on Shabbos is not an option. But I was still. I was like, I'll deal with that. When it comes time, I'll deal with that. So that was my mindset until end of 12th grade. And then yeshiva started, army. But I knew after army, I wanted to go play college ball. And that was my goal. I was going to finish army. I was going to go to YU for a year. I was going to have one more year of learning while getting back into baseball after a few years that I hadn't really been playing it on a consistent basis because of yeshiva and army. I was going to play one year of Division III. I had connections through different coaches. I was going to be able to then go and try to get an opportunity to get a scholarship somewhere, maybe D1, Division I baseball, and then see where that takes me. I got out of the army, and I met my wife. We started dating, and I realized, okay, we're staying in Israel. I continue playing baseball for the national team. I continue playing here in Israel and coaching both on the youth level and in our national team programs. I still always had this dream in the back of my mind, which hasn't gone away. It for sure hasn't gone away, of going and playing on the next level. But when I started my career in music, I realized if I want to be successful in this, I can't be having it to here and like going back and forth. And okay, now I'm going to focus on baseball. Now I'm going to focus on music. And there are definitely times where I do say, okay, now I'm going to focus on baseball. I'm going to train here. And I'm going to put music aside for a little bit. But as my music career continues to progress, I realize more and more how, if I want to be successful in music, I have to make sure that this is my goal. This is my goal. And I go after it 100%. And I'm giving my all to make sure that this comes to fruition. And baseball is something that I love to do. And I hope to be able to play it in whatever level I get to, whether it's just the national team, whether it's the next level, who knows. But I mean, probably not going to happen, which is totally fine. Now I feel totally fine with that and say, that doesn't mean that you failed. That means that you are succeeding in what you want to do, which is to be a singer.
Wow. Okay. There's a lot of questions here.
There's so much. It's crazy. There's a lot. There's a lot going on. And it's funny because, like, you know, I spoke about the fact that I started playing baseball when I was 4 years old. At 4 years old, I was already singing. Oh, and I, great. You know, obviously loved learning Torah. If someone met me when I was 7 years old and then met me again when I was now 26, I haven't changed that much. 7-year-old Shlomo played baseball, sang, and loved Torah, loved God. And 26-year-old Shlomo sings, plays baseball, and loves Torah, loves God.
Wow, that's crazy. So yeah. Was there ever a part of you that was like, not upset that you met your wife when you did, but that you were like, there goes my dream of baseball? Like, obviously you want to meet your wife and you love your wife and everything, but like, there's also this aspect of like giving up on a big dream because of that. So was that ever hard for you or no?
So it's, I think that's a really, really, really great question. The answer obviously is yes. 100%, not upset that I met my wife, but upset that I just didn't get that opportunity beforehand. I would never once throughout my entire marriage have I said, oh, you know what? I wish I had met her 3 years later. But there's obviously, you know, you think of just different situations you've been through in life and say, even though I'm really happy where I am, there obviously is part of me that wishes I could have also been in that place. So it's never, I wish I could have had that instead of this. It's, I'm very happy with where I am now. I wonder. I wonder what it would have been like had I gotten that chance.
Right.
I think about it in music sometimes, you know. I wonder where I would have been in music had I not gotten married, had I not had a kid, had I had the freedom to only have to look after Shlomo and not have to have the responsibilities, which are amazing responsibilities, of being a husband, of being a father, things I'm so grateful for every single day. I do wonder what it would have been like, whether I would have been successful, whether I would have just, because I don't have this format of family kind of keeping me centered, maybe I would have just spiraled all over the place. Maybe I would have gone after baseball and then after music and then, wait, but I want to do this and I want to do that, which was kind of what life was like beforehand. I was like, I want to go all into music, but I also really want to play baseball. But also, I just got back to Yeshiva from the army. I want to sit down and learn. And it was like spiraling. And then when I met Batsheva, when I met my wife, it kind of like, it grounded me a little bit. And it was like, okay, this is where you are. Now, from this place right here, okay, how do I go to baseball? How do I go to music? How do I sit and learn? And so the I wonder is always there, but it's never I wish.
Did you ever speak to Batsheva when you were dating or when you were engaged and you're like, we could totally still do this and we could go to IU and I could go to Division One? And like, was that ever a conversation?
Of course. I talk to her about that all the time. Bottom line is I have a wife that loves living in Israel and this is her home. This is her home. It's my home as well. I'm never going to leave it. But I always said, you know, I'd be open, especially now I'm building my career. A lot of my listeners, a lot of my potential audience is in the States. I would be very open to, for a year or two, going just to build up our careers and be there and kind of like get things going and then come back here. She wants to stay here. She wants to live here her whole life. This is her home. This is where her family is. And we're not going anywhere.
Good for her. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I know that like Mordechai Shapiro talks about it, that he left and went to America because of his music career. And like, it doesn't seem like he's coming back so soon. And, you know, you can say all you want, like, oh, we're going to come back. But like, you never know. You know, people say that all the time. People say that for 50 years and just never come back.
Right.
So,
for sure.
Batsheva's a boss.
Not only that, being here in Israel, I ended up not wanting and becoming a much more finished musical product. I know that if I was in the States, I'd be doing, from a younger age, I'd be doing chuppahs all the time and weddings all the time. And I would have felt like, oh, I'm doing it. I don't have anything else that I have to improve on. Being here in Israel and it being a lot harder to get into the industry, I was a lot hungrier. I was, let me refine my songs. Let me get better at playing musical instruments. Let me go to music college, which I went last year. I wouldn't have gone to music college if I was in the States. Went to music college and studied production and studied music theory to a level I wouldn't have done had I been in the States. I would have just said, I'm a singer and that's it. And now I'm so hungry to be the most refined version of Shlomo I can be, not just as a singer, not just as a performer, but as a musical entity, just as an artist as a whole. I want to be the best at everything. I'm not going to be the best at everything. I have a wedding band now. I'm never going to be as good of a drummer as my drummer, Yashar. I'm never going to be as good at playing keyboard or understanding composition as Ophir Perel, my keyboardist, or just know music theory like Ori Barry, my saxophone player and the band manager, or play guitar. Like, I'm giving them shout outs. Yeah, I'm giving them all shout outs. Or play guitar at the level of Yair Bento, who's my guitarist and is an unbelievable singer-songwriter. He's going to start putting out his stuff very soon. But I'm never going to be as good as they are at what they do. But I'm hungry to be the best version of Shlomo Lipman as possible. And that's not just singer, performer. That's everything that goes into being a musical artist.
Wow. So where does your teaching come into play with this hunger for being the best musician and best performer? Do you think that one day you're going to give up teaching, or you think you're going to continue teaching even if you're a top performer?
I definitely think that a day will come where I'm going to stop teaching and just go all in music. It's something that I want. I'm looking forward to the day where I wake up in the morning and I go to the studio and I just work on music and then have my performances and put out as much music as possible and just have that be my entire everything. I do know that teaching is something very good for me. I see it on myself. I see it on the impact it has on the family. I know growing up with my father being a Rebbe in yeshivas, the environment in my house, having yeshiva guys over all the time, being in the Beit Midrash all the time as a kid, playing basketball with them, guys who are in yeshiva. I know what that does to a family, which is the reason why I would love to figure out a way somehow to continue teaching in some shape or form. But I'm very much looking forward to the day where I can call up Avat Yisrael, call up wherever I'm teaching and say, hey, music is a full-time thing right now. Thank God I'm in the position where I'm able to just invest myself 100%, because that's what I want to do. At the end of the day, I'm in a period of my career where I just want to be as creative as possible. Someone asked me, if someone came to you right now and signed you as an artist, would you sign? Because a lot of people want to be independent artists, you know, and they want to have, you know, I want to create my sound, and you know, I want all the profits to go to me. I want to, you know, build my own brand. And I told him I'd sign in a second. He said, don't you want to be independent? I'd say yes, but I also want to be put in the position where I can just wake up and create. I want to just sit down and create and create and create and create. I want to completely change the Jewish music industry. And you're only able to do that if you are in it 100%. I want to be as invested. I want to be like obsessed with creating phenomenal music, high-level music and high-level music videos and my entire vibe. And that's only possible if you're in it 100%. You can't do that when you're teaching in the morning and then you come home and you want to relax a little bit because you were just, you know, talking for 5 hours straight. And then you have a gig at night. So now you have like an hour and a half where you can sit down and work on music. And right now I don't have a home studio. So it's building, it's taking out my computer, it's hooking everything up. And then El Chai, my son, comes home from Gan and I have to put everything back. And it's like, that's not a way that you're able to be creative. Sure. Sometimes amazing things happen and you sit down and you apply yourself and something happens, but that's not a format for continuous success in creative endeavors. So I'm looking forward to that day very much so.
So what inspires you to be such a big musician? What inspires your love of music? What kind of genre do you want to go into? Like you said, that you want to totally like revitalize the Jewish music world. In what ways do you want to revitalize it? Like, I'm just so curious about this whole dream.
Right. So I don't know where it comes from. Like, what about music was drawing to me? I do know that when I was 3 years old, I saw Miami Boys Choir in concert for the first time, and I knew that I wanted to be a singer. I knew when I grow up, a few stops along the way. I'm going to be old enough to be in Miami, and I'm going to be in Miami Boys Choir. Miami Boys Choir is in New York. I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland, okay? So it's a 4.5-hour drive, but it was so much so of an obsession that my parents started talking about, you know, he's turning 7, he's going to be old enough. Are we crazy enough to drive him 4.5 hours every single week to choir practice in New York?
And your parents are like, no.
We ended up making Aliyah that year.
So they were crazier than the 4.5-hour drive. They were as crazy to make Aliyah.
That's true. But they don't do it every week. That would have been insane. It's like we're going to have Shlomo fly to America every week to go to Miami Boys Choir. No, I had opportunities here in Israel, here in Beit Shemesh, Kol Baramah. Any musical kid growing up in Beit Shemesh at the time wasn't Kol Baramah. I actually teach now with a few people, Yair Froelich, one of them, who was in Kol Barama with me. Then I was on Ari Goldwag's CD, Shemes Chaverim. And then I went to Shira Chadasha, which was a choir that performed to Shweki all the time. And I really got to live a complete musical career as a kid. But I always knew this is what I want to do one day. Being on stage, I felt so at home. You see like old videos of me from like when I was 12, 13 years old. I looked so at home. And one time after a performance, whether it's true or not, I'll leave that up to debate. But someone said to me, you know, I was walking out, I was 12 years old, and he said, you got to teach Shweki how to dance. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. That's a great compliment, you know. But like, I knew that this is what I want to do one day. This is what I want to do. And I was influenced a lot by Yehuda exclamation point, which you mentioned before, the Yehuda concert. Influenced a lot. I was mesmerized by him. I was mesmerized by certain soloists in Miami Boys Choir at the time, Mordechai Shapiro actually being one of them, Isaac Ben Yishai being another, who's not a singer nowadays, but he was a kid that I looked at, and I was like, this is what I want. And he influenced me in so many ways for the good. My stage presence as a young kid was influenced by him tremendously, and even today as a professional. But I don't know where it comes from. I had a very musical house. My father grew up drumming. My grandmother was a music teacher. We always had music playing in the house, classical music, Yanni, and then Jewish music, Dveikus at the time. I was choir, Avram Fried. It was always, I grew up around it. So I think that having that background, having people in my family that were so musical and growing up with it all the time was something that I just, I fell in love with at a young age. I started drumming when I was 3, started playing piano when I was 5. And then when I made Aliyah in 4th grade here in Israel, I started playing the guitar.
Wow.
But it was always, I want to be a singer performer. I enjoyed playing music, but it wasn't like, I wasn't disciplined enough to sit down and have, you know, my parents gave me lessons, both in guitar and piano, but I never wanted to do, I just wanted to sing, right? I want to be a performer. I don't need this. I'm going to have someone else do this for me. Right. As I grew older, I wanted, like we talked about, right? I wanted to be a more refined version of myself. And I started applying myself and becoming more professional at everything that has to do with music. But that's all I wanted. And then, you know, I went to high school and I had to step away from it for a little bit. It was one of two things, always. Like I said, it was music and baseball. And the more that I saw that, you know, hey, baseball's up, it might happen, but the chances are that it's not. Not because you're not good enough, not because you live in Israel, but because you are a religious Jew and you're not going to compromise on Shabbos. That's the biggest thing. Shabbos is the biggest thing. You're not going to compromise on that. The chances of you making it while not playing on Shabbos are very, very low. That's not a bad thing. That's a great thing. You made that decision, Shlomo, right? And I'm very, very proud of that decision. It's a hard thing to realize. It's hard to say it because you know what you're compromising. But I mean, that was fine because, you know, music is what I wanted to do anyways.
Right. No, for sure. What type of music do you love the most? Is there like a specific artist right now that you know, you just mentioned a bunch of different artists, but is there any artist in specific that you're like, I want to be like this type of singer? Do you want to do secular music and Jewish music, Israeli music? I mean, what type of music do you want to do?
I love that. I love that question. If you asked if I want to do secular music as well, because I have this whole philosophy about Jewish music in general. Actually, there's a new podcast called What is Jewish Music? I just saw it this past week. I have to start listening to it. Because I planned actually on starting a podcast, basically the same thing. What is Jewish music this year? I don't know if you've noticed, but there's been a lot of craziness this year. And
a little bit.
I ended up not starting it yet. We'll see. But I obviously have to figure out exactly where I'm going to go with it, especially now that there's such a awesome, you know, podcast out there called What is Jewish Music? And talking about what it really is. I have a whole philosophy about exactly what it is. It's way too long to really go into detail here, but I definitely think that it's what's the source, where is it coming from, who is it for. A great example is, you know, Mordechai Shapiro's song Friends.
Yeah,
right. So there are certain people that won't listen to Mordechai Shapiro because for them he's not Jewish music, right? That's not Jewish music. What, Friends? You're talking about Friends, just that. Obviously most people would acknowledge that, yeah, of course it's Jewish music. Mordechai Shapiro is a Jewish music singer. If you take Bruno Mars' song, You Can Count On Me, right? You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there. How different are those two songs, right?
Yeah.
And one of them is obviously Jewish music. And one of them, you ask most people, they say, well, that's not Jewish music. Definitely not. It's a Bruno Mars song. Again, is it? What is Jewish music? What is secular music? I definitely think that there are certain things happening in Jewish music that I would say, that is not Jewish music. I've seen videos of people at weddings sampling Sam Smith's song Candy Shop at a Hasidic wedding. And it's like, what? Again, that's someone that would not necessarily listen to this, but now you're going to play that, right? So it's kind of like an either or, right? Either everything's in play and our job is to bring everything, like Nissan Black says, you know, into Lekadesh et Achol. We're supposed to be Mekadesh. We're supposed to sanctify that is mundane. And you can take something like that and play Adama V'Shamayim, which is one of the, all right, the song Adama V'Shamayim that originated from a pagan cult that worships the earth. Yeah, there's actually, I found the English song online. It's the exact same song, just in English, right?
Mind blown.
And I actually listened to Halachic Shir about it. So I was speaking to Menachem Herman about this. And for my wedding, I thought, you know, saying, I love this song. I actually love this song. And then I heard about this and I was like, you know what? When today in 2024, do you get the opportunity to stray away from idol worship? Avodah Zarah, you could talk about Avodah Zarah in sports, you know, you could talk about different things that have like a feel of Avodah Zarah. We have to, you know, where does that apply to you? But when it's actual Avodah Zarah, like real, like idol worship, right? When do we get that opportunity? And I was like, you know what? That's on my do not playlist at my wedding because of that. And I was speaking to Menachem Herman about it, who was my band at my wedding. And he said that he just looked at the lyrics and he said, how can I take this and bring it to a place of holiness? So instead of he said, I feel it in my goof, in my body. No, I feel it in the three parts of the neshama, ruach, neshama, and nefesh. And I sang a wedding with him a little bit later on, and that's what he's saying. I'm regisso binafshi, biruchi, biruchi, binafshi, binishmati, the three parts of the neshama. And you're taking it now to a place of kedusha that doesn't have to do with the body and, you know, feeling it in your body, in your soul, and connecting that to the earth and whatever. So there are different philosophies of how to go about it. But you asked before what my influences are. I've been influenced by so many different genres, so many different styles, so many different places. You know, I grew up being a Miami Boys Choir fanatic.
Before it was cool, you became a Miami Boys Choir fanatic.
I was a Miami Boys Choir fan when it was cool. Before it became uncool, before it became cool. When it was cool, when it was, Miami was on top of the world. When we were dating, I would like listen to a Miami Boys Choir song and then listen to a Kendrick Lamar song and then listen to like a Hanan Ben Ari and then listen to Yishai Rivo or Mordechai Shapiro, right? Like, it's like, what? How does this? Sono, what are you doing, right? Do you like this or this? I listened to so many different genres and they've all had an influence on me, on what I want to do. If you'd ask me, Shlomo, what do you want to do in Jewish music? Right now, I see myself as somewhere in between, like a blend of Hanan Ben Ari and Mordechai Shapiro, somewhere within that gap. So more
Israeli
music than Morty, and more Jewish music than Hanan Ben Ari, and add Bruno Mars to that mix. Right? If people ask me, what do you want to be, Shlomo Lippman? I say, I am the Jewish Bruno Mars. And that's not only in the type of music I release, but also in the whole performing aspect of it all, which is something, that's the biggest thing that I want to bring to Jewish music. Obviously, I want to release amazing songs and only amazing songs. There are some songs I listen to, I'm like, why is this out? Why is this out? We live in an age where you don't have to have 15 songs on an album and have filler songs that are not good songs, but you need 15 songs on an album. You can just release 8 songs. You can release a single every month instead. Why release bad music when you could just release amazing music, which is what I want to do. I just want to release good music. And every song that I've released in the past, there are things afterwards that I critique about it myself. I'm like, that should have been this, or this should have been that. And I hope that I continue doing that because that's just going to make me be more refined. But when it comes to the performing aspect of it all, enough with the days that someone that is a good performer in Jewish music is someone that knows how to jump on stage. I know that there are people that are going to have a problem with what I have to bring to the table. But this is what I want to do. I have a background in dance. Just like my music videos are me dancing together with background dancers, that's what my performances are going to look like. We're talking about, again, this is like my dream. This is not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a few years. But my dream down the road is a few stages, dancers all around, dance breaks in the middle, obviously unbelievable. The level of the music I want to be phenomenal. I don't want it just to be...
Only men or women too?
As my dancers?
Yeah.
Men. Only men. First of all, that's what I believe in. But also, I'm never going to take away... If somebody has a problem with my music and just doesn't want to listen to my music, that's totally fine. But I'm never going to create anything, or I never want to create anything that would cause someone else to have a problem and say, oh, I can't watch that, and therefore I can't connect to that.
For sure.
But yeah, I just did a photo shoot in the States for some new headshots that I'm gonna get them soon with the Jewish Giant. Shout out to Yisrael Teitelbaum, unbelievable photographer. And the pictures that I took, I told people, I can't imagine a Jewish music pop star. Good, throw that out the window. Take Justin Bieber, put him over here, and put a kippah on his head. It's a completely different feel to what does a Jewish music pop star look like. But that's just it. Like we were talking before about what is allowed, what isn't allowed. Either you're okay with bringing in influences from mainstream music and you bring it to the greatest place possible and make it kadosh and make it right, or we'd say none of this is allowed and you go back to just the way Jewish music was, which is, I don't know what you go back to, because everything was new at a certain point. You know, right. Neeson Black, I talked about it beforehand. He had an amazing tweet a few years ago. He's obviously talking about himself in the rap field. And he said, all music, if you look back to Tuval Kayan, it was created, according to the Medrash, for Avodah Zarah worship. Right? They created musical instruments to worship idols, to worship things that were not God. So how do you take any music and make it kadosh? That's just it. Things come into the world in a certain way, and it's our job to bring it and take it into a place of serving God, into a place of holiness. I do know that, I mean, this is how I want to live my life anyways, but because of how edgy I'm going to be as a persona, right? Look, this is how I dress on the day-to-day basis. I'm not going to change this on the day-to-day basis. I'm not going to start walking around with designer outfits and this and that and become like a quote-unquote Hollywood pop star. That's not what I'm looking for. But on stage, 100%, I'm here to entertain. And I'm going to entertain you the best I can. Obviously, keep it kosher. How do I do that? By everything that I represent, by everything that I'm trying to convey, by everything that I'm trying to influence. But I'm not going to hold myself back from what I can bring to the table. I'm going to bring everything that Shlomo Lippman has to bring to the table. And I'm going to have to make sure that I am the best Torah Jew that I can be in my personal life and in the way I present myself at all times, so people realize, oh, this isn't Shlomo trying to be like this or like this. No, this is who he is as a performer. And that's awesome.
Great. Wow. So how does Bat Sheva see all of this? I'm so curious, like, what is Bat Sheva's take on your visions of life? Also, is she as musical as you?
So she is a way better dancer than I'll ever be. She grew up dancing. She got her degree in education in dance, professional ballerina.
So she can be your background dancer.
So she, for all my music videos, if you guys go out there and watch Kanitka or Pnima, we made the choreography together. I kind of came to her with, like, this is like the vibe that I want. And then we sat down and we built the choreography together. And then I taught my dancers based on her choreography. We're a team. We are a team. When it comes to certain things musically in her dances, I'll tell her, hey, why not do this because of the music over here? And when it comes to my dancing, she helps out and she choreographs everything that I do. I mean, her friends wanted to set us up because we both danced. And she's like, that's not a reason. You know, I have to actually connect him as a person. Thank God we did connect on that level. But on our first date, she talked about the fact that she wants to be a dancer. And I talked about the fact that I want to be a singer. And we connected on that right away. We realized we both want to go into fields that are not the norm. These are not regular professions. And we're going to be there to support each other. I think that my vision is very, very, very out there. And I know that. And her visions are a lot more, she's a lot more down to earth, which is amazing. She keeps me grounded. She keeps me humble. I don't lose myself. And I'm very grateful for that every single day. But she's incredibly supportive and she's behind me throughout every step of the way.
That's incredible. Wow. No, she's really awesome. So I guess, you know, in terms of your music career during the Army, during Miloim, since October 7th, I'm not talking about like way back.
Right.
I'm talking about since October 7th. And I know that you aren't shy about the fact that you might be going in the near future. How is this affecting your career? Like, is it helping because you're a chayal? Is it being detrimental because you don't have as much time?
Right. So, well, if we go back to right before the war started, so let's say the week of Sukkot, right? I had just broken 1,000 followers on Instagram, and I was pushing really, really hard and talking to Batsheva at times, you know, all the time about how hard the struggle was and really trying to get out there. I already had a wedding band, but it moved slowly because things move slowly. That's just how life works. And the grind was real. And then I got called up on Simchat Torah. So I went up on October 7th. By October 7th night, we were already by the border, already by my post. And for the first few days, I didn't upload. Obviously, no reels, no stories. It wasn't like, hey, guys, I'm here by the... I was like, this is not the time for that. That's not... I didn't feel like I wanted to do that. I was like, this is not like for, oh, look at me, I'm also chayal. No, I'm a chayal. Like, this is real. This is real, okay? And then a few days in, my friends were asking me, Shlomo, can you sing for us a little bit? Let's go lighten the mood. And I was like, I don't want to like sing right now. That's not like... It's not what we're doing right now. We're guarding, right? We're guarding the border. We got to make sure that we have, there's a real threat of Hezbollah trying to breach the northern border, just like Hamas did in the south.
You're very like serious person, which is funny because I did not like from your Instagram and whatever, you're right. Like a very like out there person, but like having an actual conversation with you,
it's hysterical. I know part of it definitely comes from the same thing that's pushing me to get to this crazy level of success in Jewish music. It's like I want to be the best version of myself as I can be. So if I'm now talking to you, I'm going to set up my background light. I'm going to set up my microphone. I'm going to turn off the light over here. I'm going to have my water ready over here. I'm going to have a good background. I'm going to be dressed properly. Why? Because I want to be the best version of Shlomo right now that I could be. It used to be really, really bad. I used to be a crazy perfectionist. I'm not saying that I'm not now, but I'm a lot better than I used to be. Now I just try being the best version that I can be. And if I mess up, I mess up. It's totally fine. I'll take you back to last Thursday. I had a wedding and my voice cracked during the Kiseh Kala. I'm singing, my voice cracked. Years ago, I would have said, shoot, I wasn't perfect. Shlomo, how dare you not be perfect? You're supposed to be perfect. And now it was like, oh, I feel bad because like they wanted the best version of Shlomo they could get and they didn't get the best version of Shlomo they could get. So I feel bad that I wasn't able to give them exactly what they wanted. But it's not like this perfectionist side, which I think is why baseball was so good for me. Because when it comes to music, it's like, you got to be perfect. You got to be this. And baseball is a game that's built on failure. The best players, you know, their batting average is 300. That's failing 70% of the time. You fail over and over and over and over again. And it's all about, okay, next step at. Okay, next batter as a pitcher, right? So I think that baseball was so good for me because I had this place in my life. I was such a perfectionist, but I had a place in my life where I was able to treat myself with, it's okay if you're not perfect. You're just trying to be the best you can be. And if you fail, that's fine. And get back up. So that's basically where this comes into play. It's me trying to be the best version of Shlomo I can be on this podcast.
So like back to the army though.
Right. So I made this video. I saw videos online of my wedding band still performing. And whether it was for like small weddings that, you know, were either called off or pushed to very small events or like home weddings in the backyard, kind of like COVID style weddings, just because of the situation. And I felt disconnected for them. And I wanted to like send them a video, both to feel like part of them again, but also like, man, I wish I could be there with you guys singing, but I'm here on the border. So I was sitting in this bunker and I made a video of me singing just a wedding song, and I sent it to them, and that was it. That's the only place I sent it to. And then all of a sudden, I start getting WhatsApps and messages on Instagram. Is this you? This that? But and it's going everywhere, and it's on Joey Newcomb's status, and it's on this other status on WhatsApp, which has 100,000 followers, and it gets to Living L'Chaim, and it's like. And I was like, how did this get out? I didn't send it to anyone. One of the guys in the band sent it to someone else. And it kind of like within a day, it was everywhere.
That's how the Jewish world works.
It was so crazy. So that night, I was like, I posted it. That was the first time I posted something since the beginning of the war. I was like, okay, this is everywhere already. So I guess let me post this as well. So I posted it. And slowly, I'm noticing that my Instagram is getting a lot more following, you know, I'm starting to get tagged in all these things. The next day, we were on the way back from the shooting range and we noticed this wedding that was being made for a chayal on our moshav that we were guarding over by the Lebanon border, right on the border. And I went up to them, the people that were involved in putting this together, and I said, hey, you know, I see what's going on here. I see it's a very small wedding. I'm a wedding singer. I would love to sing for them if they want. They checked with the Chatan and Kala and they were like, yeah, we'd love that. So I was singing Mishkachech after Chuppah, and that's that video that went absolutely viral. On Instagram, it has over 1 million views. On YouTube, it has over 2 million views, and that's just the main video. There are a few different angles of that video, and all of them have a crazy amount of views online from all these different places.
Wow.
And I went to sleep that night, and I woke up the next morning with 3,500 followers. And the next few days, I was just answering DMs because I answer everybody. And if you guys send me a DM, I'm going to answer you. I appreciate everybody that reaches out.
Because you're a perfectionist.
Hey, it might come from that, definitely. You know, I was answering people. They're saying, "Oh, thank you so much. We needed this." And I was like, "Of course, of course." I realized two things. One, that I have a role to play here, aside from guarding, aside from being an actual chayal, especially at the beginning of the war. Social media was filled with sadness and sorrow and death and hardship. And I was this little sliver of hope and light. You know, hey, I'm just singing and life goes on and there's a wedding happening here and I am on uniform by the Lebanon border, but I'm going to be singing here and I'm continuing, you know, to bring light, to spread light, which is something I realized that people needed. And so I continued. I started making a lot more videos and sending them out. I never really did any collaborations until then. And then I started just making collaborations with Living L'Chaim, with Meaningful Minute, with other pages, just because I realized, hey, you know, people need this. So let me provide what I'm able to provide. And I realized that Hashem, I felt how close I was to God. And like, God was like, Shlomo, because I was like, Hashem, I've been trying to break out for years. I've been trying to get this career started, which thank God I managed to do. And I have songs that are out there that are on the radio that people are listening to. But it was definitely not at the level that I wanted it to be at. And it still isn't where I'm dreaming of, but it's obviously a lot more present than it was beforehand. And it was like Hashem was saying, Shlomo, I'm saving you for a rainy day. Like, there's going to be a time soon that people are going to need inspiration and it's going to come from a new source. Think of for a second if Shweki made a video of him singing at a wedding or whatever, right? It would be meaningful, but it wouldn't be the same as seeing a chayal on the border singing at a wedding. So like, it was like Hashem saying, there's a reason why I'm saving you for now, right? You're gonna blow up soon because I gave you the talents. Everything that I have is from Hashem. I obviously try to refine it, but I definitely understand that everything is from God. So I gave you these talents and you're gonna use them one day, but I'm saving you for a time that Am Yisrael and the world really needs you. You know, I just did a show in Toronto and the woman that brought me in said, I made two weddings this past summer. I was searching for a singer like you and I couldn't find one. I was like, hey, I was here. I was trying. You know, I was putting out content every single week. I was reaching out to people. I was trying to get out there. You know, I was here. Where were you, right?
Yeah, for
where
sure.
were you? You should have been searching for me, right? No, but I realized that God was like, hey, you know, the time's going to come and people are going to need you. So it definitely, my platform is so much bigger now than it was beforehand. And it would be silly to continue life the way it was before and say, okay, no, but this is just because of the war and I'm going to continue being Shlomo. I'm going to continue, you know, going about things the way I was beforehand and performing in small little things here in Beit Shemesh and weddings here and there. God gives you this platform. You have to capitalize. It's not capitalize on the war, capitalize on the opportunity that you're given. If you recognize that everything at the end of the day is for God and he gave you these abilities, then not taking advantage of the opportunities that he gives you is kfui tova. That's just saying, God, I know that you gave me this opportunity, but I'm not going to take it. I'm just going to continue the way things were beforehand. And I think that that's wrong. That's not what I'm going to do. At the end of the day, I'm trying to get to as many people as possible. So I went to the States. I had three shows there in New Jersey, New York, Toronto. And that's what I'm going to continue to do, continue to obviously build my career here in Israel, because this is my home. I'm not going anywhere.
But Sheva won't let you.
But Sheva will not let me go anywhere. I live in a basement apartment, and there are times that I'm like, I just want to be successful already. You know, I want to be there. I want to arrive already. I want to be at the point where I'm doing music full time, and I have the financial stability of a musical career, and I don't have to rely on other jobs or have to worry about budgets, which I'm sure that that's always going to be there. It doesn't matter how successful you are, you're always going to have to work. You're always going to be on some sort of budget, because you, if you're a creative individual and you have these wild dreams, then there's no end to what you can dream of doing and what you want to do. But there are definitely times I'm like, I just want to be there already. And then there are other times that you really, you know, I appreciate the humble beginnings. I look at like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to look back and say like, well, remember then? Remember when I didn't even have a home recording studio and I just had to like set up my computer and the mic for like 30 minutes to try to work on something before El Chai comes home from Gan and then he starts touching everything and I have to put everything away? Like, remember those days? Wow, look how far I've come. And I see that day to day now, you know, the exposure that the war has given me. That part of it, at the beginning, I was really, and this is something I didn't say before, but at the beginning, I felt really guilty. You know, all of a sudden I have this massive platform and thousands of people are following me and people are asking me to come sing at weddings in the States and come perform here and come perform there. I felt really guilty and like, that this is not right. Like I'm taking advantage of the fact that there's a war, people died, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And then I said, no, it's not taking advantage. For some reason, you were put in this situation now. You're not a better singer now than you were a year ago. You're not a better musical artist now than you were a year ago. It's just that God put you in this situation now. And it's up to you to say, okay, what do I do with this now? How do I use this in the correct way and not capitalize and not say, oh, great. Great that the war happened. I have this amazing platform now. Everybody look at Shlomo Lipman. Look how awesome I am. Just the opposite. Understand why God waited until now for you to have this exposure and see what can I do now and how can I make sure that the best thing comes out of this as possible. And, you know, I'm an American that made Aliyah that have this. I have this Israeli vibe. I have this American vibe. I have this crazy big dream of what I want to do with Jewish music. And I can really connect, you know, this new song, Achim Biyachad, that I just released together with Aryeh Kunstler. That is literally what my role is here in this whole big thing. It's connecting Israelis and Americans and connecting Jewish music here in Israel with Jewish music in the States and bridging the gap. And the gap is becoming smaller and smaller as the years go by. Jewish music and Israeli music are getting closer and closer to the same thing. And I'm just a small part of that amazing, amazing process, which is going to make the entire Jewish world so much closer together and bring people closer to Israel, which is what we want at the end of the day.
Well, just so you know, I am a very firm believer that Yishai Ribo is part of bringing Mashiach because he knows how to unify all different types of Jews from all over the world. And I definitely believe that he is part of bringing the Geula, without a doubt. So sure. Maybe you're part of that too.
Halavai, I hope so. I hope so. If I'm able to be part of that, like, thank God for that, really.
For sure. I really want to talk about your dad, like going back to that, because I know we don't have that much time, but it is important for me to touch on the fact that you are a politician's son. Am I making up that he gave up American citizenship?
He did have to give up his American citizenship, yeah.
Okay. Did you give up American citizenship?
No, we did not. He had to give up his American citizenship to be a member of Knesset. So like now, when we went to the Knesset as a family afterwards, when we go through customs, we're in the fast line and he has to go together with all the Israelis. There was one time where, and he has a card that says that he's a former diplomat. He's no longer in the Knesset. He was in the 19th Knesset. I think he was elected when I was in 10th grade. But he was standing in line with everyone else and the rest of the family was already through and it was taking forever. I went up to one of the people in customs and I was like, my father is a former diplomat. Our entire family are American citizens. He has a card that shows that he's a diplomat. Can he please come here and show it to you and come through with the family? So I was like, sure. We went back to the line. We got him. And at the time, like my mom was like, no, don't do that. Abba doesn't want that. But it was like, it saved us 2 hours. So I was like, thank God for that. Yeah. But he had to give up his American citizenship. He had to raise his right hand. And so the woman there said, repeat after me. I renounce. He had to actually say the words. I renounce my American citizenship. It was very hard for him. We come from a very patriotic American family, American values. Even though I am Israeli, my neshama is Israeli, there's a lot of me that's still American. Anyone that looks at me, anyone that listens to me, anyone that sees me perform can see that. I'm very, very American in the way that I present myself. Every once in a while, I find myself going down a rabbit hole of different renditions of the Star Spangled Banner. And it's one of my favorite things to do. And by the way, that's something I'm trying to like bring that to Hatikva as well. It's something that bothers me that no one does that with Hatikva. No one makes a tikva their own. And that's something that I definitely want to do. It's like, hey, you know, I'm an artist. I'm singing a tikva now. Let me see how I can take this, you know, the way that I present my music. How can I make this sound unique? How can I make this sound nicer and a different, you know, the originals always great, but there's always room to be creative. But yeah, so he had to renounce his American citizenship and everything. And that was definitely very hard for him, but we did not have to.
Okay. So how was it, though, being the son of a politician? Maybe one day we'll have him on, but do you know what made him decide to go into politics? And how did it affect your family?
He was always interested in politics. When he was 16, he was an intern by the Capitol. My grandfather was a federal judge. So he was always very interested in it. But that's not what made him actually go into politics. What made him go into politics was there were problems happening here in Beit Shemesh between extremists and just the regular community. So he was just a volunteer and advocate for, you know, things that were happening here in Beit Shemesh. He helped out with the whole fiasco with the road banot that they wanted to take the school and give it to the Haredi community, even though it was promised to the Shilomi community.
If anybody wants to catch up on what Shlomo is talking about, go over to Shoshana Keats Jaskel podcast where we talk more about that. Just wanted to pitch that because we talk about that a lot in Shoshana Keats Jaskel's podcast, and I think so people have reference for what you're talking about.
All right. So he was very involved in that whole story. He was there every single day with the girls and the mothers and making sure that they were safe. He was very involved here in Beit Shemesh, and he tried getting things changed, and he realized that you can't make real change from here in Beit Shemesh. You have to make real change from a bigger platform, and he started getting involved in national politics. He did not think at the time he was going to be a member of Knesset. And then one thing led to another. The more he got involved in things, he found himself being a member of Knesset in the 19th Knesset. How did it affect us? It affected my sisters a lot more than me.
Why?
Because they were living in Beit Shemesh and they were younger and they cared about people looking at us. Oh my gosh, Abba, people are looking at us. I am Shlomo, the guy that always wants to be on stage, wants all eyes to be on him. I couldn't care less. They're looking at us. Great. You know, let's all walk confidently, you know, as a family. Let's wave to the cameras. Let's take pictures. Of course. That's what I want. That's what I've been dreaming of. So I didn't really care. And I was in high school already. You know, I was in a dorm high school. During the elections, obviously, people made fun, this and that. But once he actually became a member of Knesset, once he was elected, that all went away. Whenever I had a free afternoon in high school, I would go to the Knesset and see him. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun for me. I know that it affected my sister a little bit more. But for myself, it really wasn't that different. You know, at home, things weren't that different. In school, things weren't that different. I was always myself, my father, my family. Everything really stayed the same around our family unit. And it ended up being just a wonderful, wonderful time.
So how did it affect your sisters? Like, are you allowed to shed a little bit more light on that?
Yeah, it was very hard for them at first. You know, all this attention, the fact that people are talking about my dad in the media. They didn't like it. You know, my sister Devorah said that she was going to protest against my dad running for Knesset because she did not want him to be a member of Knesset. She cried when he got elected and then ended up crying when he did not get reelected. You know, because life happens and different stages lead to different things and you get used to it.
Great. No, for sure. Wow.
Right.
And do you have any family in Israel besides for your immediate family?
We have my mom's two brothers live in Israel. My grandparents have made Aliyah from both sides. And, you know, on one side, they go back and forth because I still do have a lot of cousins in the States. My wife, her entire family is here. Her cousins, her grandparents on both sides, her great-grandparents. She has great-grandparents who are 96 and 100 years old living in Yerushalayim, married. We have a lot of families still living in the States. And that was part of the reason why we went back almost every summer growing up. And now I'm going back for music, which is what I always, you know, I always dreamed of. I always dreamed of being able to, I'm not going to summer camp. I'm going because I'm singing at a wedding. I'm going because I have a concert. So it's fun. It's fun to have that switch.
Does Bat Sheva mind you going back so much?
You know, it's funny. Me being away for 2.5 months in the army definitely prepared her for the fact that now I'm getting all these opportunities and all these requests to go and perform around the world. We talk about it now, you know, how often this is going to happen, when I'm going to go. When I'm going to come back, how long I stay for. This is everything that comes with you know, getting to that next level of your career is you have to have these conversations. And I always try to see her side of things and see that, you know, yeah, I know that this is obviously for the family, making money for the family. My career taking steps forward is not just for me, for my ego, but also at the end of the day, it's to provide for a family. But also it's just that, it's to provide for a family. So I have to make sure that I'm always making the right decisions as a husband, right decisions as a father, and especially, you know, Bezrat Hashem, things are going to continue to grow and I'm going to be flying a lot more frequently and it's going to be on a bigger scale. So I do know that, but at the end of the day, it's all for the family. And as long as I keep that in front of me and I always realize that my number one job is to be a husband and a father, and I'll hopefully be successful at everything else.
For sure. how do you not let your ego get to you?
That's a great question. First of all, having an outlet to be able to talk about yourself, I think, is really important. Something that I think that everyone should have people that they're able to talk about how great they are to them. For me, it's my band. I feel like that's the only place where I allow myself to say, you heard that? That was an awesome chuppah. I rock, right? Because you have to be able to acknowledge, you know, there's a story of Rav Moshe Feinstein that he got into an argument with someone over a certain Tosfot. And I think it was on Sukkot, and he's like, no, it's over here. And someone's like, no, I think it's over here. He's like, it's over here. And then he ran into the house, checked the Gemara, came back out and said, I'm right. And you're like, Rav Moshe, like, what? Why is it so important for you to be like, what? That's not you. You're such a... Rav Moshe was famously a tremendously humble person. And he said, yeah. You don't think I know who I am? I know that I'm the Gadol Hador. I know that I'm the Posek of America. If I can't remember where Tosfot is, then I can't be the Posek Hador. I can't be the Posek for American Jewry. And you know what that means for the Jewish people? That's a horrible thing. I have to make sure, and therefore, yes, I have to make sure that I'm right because I know that I am Rav Moshe Feinstein. He didn't go around preaching that. He definitely didn't say that to himself every day when he looked in the mirror and said, I'm so great. I'm the Gadol Hador. But being humble is knowing who you are, but recognizing that it's not from you. But having that outlet to be able to talk about that is really healthy, because it's not just suppressing yourself and no, but I'm not. No. I'm great. I've worked really hard to be a really good singer and a really good performer. I don't go around talking about that. I definitely don't. I would never say I'm the best at this, because that's not also for yourself to say ever. That's for other people to talk about. But have that outlet to be able to talk to people about it, whether it's your family, whether it's your parents or friends, to be able to talk about that. That's number one. Number two is what we just talked about, understanding that it's not from you, understanding that I didn't do anything special here to get this exposure. All I did was sing at a chuppah like I've done many times before. It just happened to be that it's at a time where people need this inspiration and I happen to be on uniform. Right? I didn't do anything special here. I just continued being what I did on a daily basis. And I think the third thing, the fact that I don't see myself as like a celebrity or having arrived, like having those big dreams. So every step of the way, it's like, great, I got here, but that's not what I'm trying to get to. I don't want 3,000 followers, 5,000, 6,000 followers. I don't want to do, you know, a wedding once a month, two times a month, three times a month. I want to be performing on the biggest stages in front of 50,000 people 15 times a year, right? I want to conquer the world of Jewish music. I want to then conquer the world of Israeli music. I want to get to mainstream music through Jewish music and be a complete Olam HaGoyim. You know, imagine I have this conversation a lot with people, whether it's something good to strive for, to want to have a Grammy one day, right? Is it, mm-hmm. We want to be a light onto the nation. So having someone from Jewish music winning a Grammy, how great that would be. Or is that something that I should be striving for as a Jewish music artist, right? That's not what we're striving for. I'm striving to try to make a Kiddush Hashem, and that's not the place for that. It's something that I think about a lot, but let's say I am striving for that. I want to get to that point. So every step along the way, I'm not fulfilled. It's not like, look at me, I'm so great, because I'm like, I'm not so great because I want to be here and I want to be here and I want to be here and I want to be here. I think in an unhealthy way, social media is very good for that, because you see other people that are more successful than yourself and you're like, ugh, but I'm only here. And it humbles you. That's not a healthy way, yeah. But it definitely does humble you and keep you from letting your ego get to you.
For sure. Okay, so the last two questions are this. I know that you've given a lot of pasuks or quotes and whatever, but is there one pasuk or quote that maybe you tell yourself continuously, or is there a pasuk or a quote that inspires you?
There are three. Pasuk-wise, whenever I am feeling unfulfilled musically or like, oh, I'm not where I want to be, I wish this, I wish that, I think of the pasuk, Sof davar hakol nishma et Elokim yirav et mitzvotav shemo ki zeh kol ha'adam. At the end of the day, we're put into this world to serve God, and that is it. And when you feel unfulfilled or feel like I'm not where I want to be, I think of, yeah, but that's not my goal in life. Selfishly, I want to get there. But at the end of the day, I just want to be a servant of God. I want to be a vessel to bring God's name into this world and bring his light into this world. And everything that I want to do in music in general is all part of that. So if I'm not there yet, that's not, the goal isn't to be a pop star. The goal is not to be a celebrity. The goal is to be a servant of God. Another line that was my line in high school when I was so hungry to start a career in music, but I knew I'm about to go to the yeshiva, that I'm going to go to the army, is the song, "Don't You Worry, Child, Heaven Has a Plan for You." Right? And that was my motto for years, and it still is. We saw it just now, right? I was struggling to start this career, and all of a sudden, boom, I blow up overnight because heaven has a plan for me. Like, God had a plan that when the Jewish world needed this inspiration, needed this light, Shlomo Lipman as a chayal was going to be there to sing Mishkechech at a wedding of another chayal and bring hope and light to people that needed it. That's the second one. And then the third one is my personal motto, which is my status on WhatsApp. It's Lichyot Kimo Yehudi V'lo Lihiyot Yehudi Shechai. Live like a Jew and not just be a Jew that's alive. It's not, oh, I happen to be born as a Jew and therefore I have to daven chapters, therefore I have to put on tefillin and I can't do this and I can't do that. Or no, it's live like a Jew. You know, think this is, heck yeah. Heck yeah. I'm Jewish. I'm a Jewish music artist and I'm always going to see myself as a Jewish music artist. And that's not a bad thing. That's a great thing. Because Jewish music, again, when we talked about that, I have this whole philosophy about it. It's not for now because I'm already talking like crazy. And if I start talking about it, we're going to be here for hours. But like, that's my goal. It's not a bad thing. That's an amazing thing. Thank God that I'm a Jewish music artist. That's awesome. And that's my line.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then the last thing is, do you have any message that you want to wrap up this podcast with? Any like last words that you want to share?
It's all going to be good. It's all going to be good. I found myself on October 7th. I woke up late and had to rush to shul. And I got to shul and I start. And then as I got to shul, the first siren sounded here in Beit Shemesh. And I said a hallel, having already known, okay, something's going on. And hearing from people, hearing what's going on. And guys already started getting called up. So as I was saying hallel, you know, you would think that when you get to the words, Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki Lo Olam Chasdo, you would stop and say, really, God? Is it all good? Come on, look at what's going on now. I don't know why, but for some reason, I stopped and I said, whoa, somehow this is all good. I didn't question it. It wasn't like, really, this is good? It was like, no, somehow this is all good and it doesn't make any sense to us, but like,
wow,
this is all ki le'olam chasdong. Hashem's chesed is everlasting and always. So it's going to be good. And it might take a while, but that's okay. That's okay. You know, we've been around for 3,000 years. This has been half a year now. Okay. So like that's nothing in our eternal timeline. That's nothing. And it's all going to be good.
For sure. No, it's interesting because my mom, you know, we were talking about it. My parents came for Shabbat this past week and we were talking about anti-Semitism, right? And my mom's like, well, we all know why there's so much anti-Semitism in the world. And I'm like, yeah, because Mashiach is around the corner. And she's like, oh, that's not what I was thinking.
Yes.
I'm like, but that's what I feel. Yes. Like, I'm like, we're at a foot, like, it's right here. And like,
it's right here. It's right here. It is right here.
Let's just hold on a little bit longer. And yeah, we'll get there. So yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, I just wanted to give you a moment to pitch yourself. I know that you give a lot of shout outs to a lot of people. But how can we find you? How can we get in touch with you? Instagram, email.
The best, the easiest way is over Instagram, Shlomo Lipman Music. Like I said before, I respond to any DM, any message that's sent to me. I'll get right back to you. My email as well is Shlomo Lipman Music. Same thing, shlomolipmanmusic@gmail.com. Those are the best ways to get in touch with me for events, for flying in or whatever it is. Those are the best ways to get in touch with me. I have a wedding band right now together with Ori Be'eri, an unbelievable saxophone player. He's the manager of the band. We are a very, very unique wedding band, and myself as having this, you know, we've been talking for hours about my whole philosophy about Jewish music and the whole performing, you know, the whole let's start actually performing. Let's put on a show. That's what you get when you have us at a wedding. When I'm singing at your wedding or whatever the event is or concert of the show, I'm performing, I'm giving everything that I have. And it's not just me standing around or jumping around with a microphone. You're getting a full show. And that's something that's very unique.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Shlomo, for giving me so much of your time today. I appreciate it tremendously. And I really appreciate hearing all about your music and your philosophy on music and everything that you want to do and everything that you're currently doing and your approach to life. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And yeah, looking forward to getting this episode out, and have a good one.
You too. Have an awesome day.
All the best. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Anything But Traditional. I'm so happy that you are here today to listen in on this week's episode. This week, we had Shlomo Lipman on, and I really think that his story is very different than so many people's because it's really about his passions, his beliefs, his baseball career, his music career, his army experience, right? And I feel like so many episodes, it's been about the weight. And for him, it was, how do I conquer everything? How do I accomplish everything when it's all happening at once? And I think that people definitely have that struggle too. And it's a struggle that I'm not as familiar with. And I don't know if you guys are, but it's a struggle that should be tapped into because I think that, you know, so often we're like, oh, the weight. But what happens when it rains and pours, you know, and how does that affect our lives? And I think that Shlomo Lipman really shares that in this episode. So I'm so happy that you listened to this episode. If you want to sponsor an ad or a dedication or anything of the sort, please let me know. Please reach out. If you have somebody that you want to recommend come on the show, please let me know. Please make sure to give us a 5-star review on Apple's podcast and Spotify. And just keep listening. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. Of course, we'll discuss on Tales of Tomorrow on Instagram. So go on over and discuss there. I'm so excited to be getting to 10K. Hopefully by the time you see this, it will be way past 10K. And I just wanted to say that this is the second to last episode before we go on the Pesach break. So enjoy it. Listen up. Listen in. And I'm so happy that you are here today. Thank you so much for listening. All the best. Until next time.